think that the study that I'm going to present to you is going to show you why these child abuse prevention services that we just heard about are so important. I'm really pleased to be with you today. I'm filling in for Dr. Jonathan Koch, who is the PI of this 20-year study that the data come from that I'm going to be reporting to you on, and he sends his greetings and regrets that he couldn't be here. The purpose of this small study that I'm going to tell you about, well, we had three aims, and one was just to look at exposure data by age 18 of kids who have been followed for 18 years. They were selected at birth because of high-risk status and were followed for 18 years. So at 18 years, we're trying to be able to capture what does their exposure status to child maltreatment and to witnessed violence look like. And then we wanted to take a look at the relationship of this exposure status to deviant behavior at age 18. And in this case, where deviant behavior is just a term we chose for want of a better one to describe involvement in violence, delinquency, or substance abuse. And then we wanted to take a look at the moderating effect of gender on that relationship between exposure to violence and deviant behaviors at age 18. I'll get that right. So a little bit of background. We're reporting here at APHA because we're public health researchers and we consider children's exposure to violence, their own maltreatment, and the violence that they witness in their homes and communities to be a major public health problem. Official reports suggest that maybe 12.5 children per 1,000 are victims of child maltreatment. But we know that the rates are much higher. I'm preaching to the choir here. You know that's the tip of the iceberg because most child maltreatment doesn't get reported. Data from a recent retrospective study, the National Adolescent Health Study, that's also called AdHealth, that just looked at kids from across the country, this is just a normal population, found much higher rates, 42% for neglect, 28% for physical abuse. The sexual abuse rate is really low, I think, but that's what they found. And witness violence has been less studied, but we all know that there's a huge overlap between child abuse and neglect and witness violence, such that children who are experiencing one are at high risk for the other. And as most of you know, maltreatment and exposure to violence in the home have been shown to be associated with many adverse outcomes, including delinquency, violent behavior, and substance abuse, which are the things that we're interested in this study. I mean, all of these studies of maltreatment always have some limitations, and our study is a little bit unique in that it's a prospective longitudinal study, and we just wanted to take a look at this same relationship that's been reported before. The other thing that we know is that males and females tend to have different responses to stress, including exposure to violence, and so we wanted to look at that in our population, too. So the other background piece that I want to tell you about is about LongScan, which is the consortium of studies that this small study comes from. LongScan started in 1991, and it's a 20-year study of the causes and consequences of maltreatment. There are five study sites, and I'm going to be reporting to you on the southern site, which is in North Carolina. These five sites share data collection methods and instruments and data management and analysis. The children are of different ages, and the sample that I'm going to be telling you about is the oldest sample. LongScan now has 177 publications, and at the end of my presentation, I'll give you the website for LongScan in case you're interested in learning more about it. Okay, so that's the consortium, and then the study, the aims for this presentation are going to come from the North Carolina site, as I said, which is the oldest site in the sample. And it started in 1986 and 87, not as part of LongScan, but as part of a study called the Stress and Social Support Study. It wanted to look at the relationship of stress and social support to child maltreatment. And Jonathan Koch and Dot Brown, who were the original investigators on this study, recruited 842 mother-infant dyads who were identified through a program that we have in North Carolina called the High Priority Infant Program. We used to have this program. We don't have it anymore. But the program was identifying children who would be considered to be at risk for all kinds of problems, developmental problems, and in fact, the kinds of risk factors that put them at risk for poor development. Dr. Koch and Dr. Brown also realized put them at risk for child maltreatment. So with the infants, they were biomedical problems like being low birth weight or having birth defects or other significant medical problems at birth. The other thing that would put a mother-infant dyad at risk were psychosocial, socioeconomic factors related to the mother, like being very young, being extremely poor, having a substance abuse problem, being mentally ill, or having other social problems. And so with the stress and social support study, the mothers were recruited while they were in the hospital and interviewed the first week after the child came home from the hospital. So this is truly a longitudinal study, starting with data the first week after the child came home from the hospital. The mothers were interviewed again at the child's first birthday and second birthday, and some, I think only about 60, were interviewed on the third birthday, because by that time the funding for the stress and social support study was running out, and which was a shame because it was such a large amount of data on these high-risk families. And so it was long scanned to the rescue. In 1991, the National Center for Child Abuse and Neglect decided to fund this consortium of longitudinal studies. And knowing that this North Carolina sample had such great data on at-risk families starting at birth, it was the first study that was recruited to become part of long scan. But long scan didn't have as much funding as the original one did, so the 840-some families couldn't be followed, so that we needed to select a subsample. And the way that was done was taking 80 children who had already been reported for abuse and neglect by their third birthdays and matching them by race and sex and SES to children who had not been reported by their second birthdays. And so that became the sample for the stress and social support study in long scan, and the 242 dyads were followed forward with interviews every other year. I mean, and these are really exhaustive interviews up until a child is age 18. The primary caregivers were interviewed at every data point, and the children started giving data on themselves at age 6. Okay, so just to remind you again of what the aims of this study are, it was to look at the exposure data that we gathered on these kids for 18 years, and then to see if the exposure to child maltreatment or witnessed violence related to deviant behavior at age 18, and to see if there are any gender effects. So now I'm going to tell you a little bit about the measures. The maltreatment data collected on the child participants came from two sources. One was from Child Protective Service records, and this was not from the Central Registry. They started out looking at Central Registry data, but found that going into the records and abstracting data from the records gave a much better picture of the children's maltreatment history. And the other source was getting reports directly from the children beginning at age 12. And the reports were very detailed on physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect. They also collected data on psychological abuse, but those data had not been analyzed yet in time for this. And then also starting at age 6, they collected data from the children on witness violence. So just to tell you a little bit more about that, the CPS allegations of maltreatment, in this particular study, if there was an allegation in the CPS records of any kind of maltreatment, then that child was coded with that kind of maltreatment. And the measure that we used came from Manley, Barnett, and Cicchetti. And it's a very interesting method where you go into the CPS case records and look at everything that's been alleged and code from the allegations. And we realize that these are not substantiated reports, and in the earlier presentation we heard that only a small proportion of reports are substantiated, but the literature shows that reports are as good or better predictor of outcomes than substantiation is, and so we decided just to take a look at reports. The abstractors would go into the records every 2 years to abstract this data. So if children were coded as any of these types of abuse in the records, then that would be a yes for exposure for this particular analysis. And then the other way that they would get coded yes is if they self-reported maltreatment. And so we did collect these reports of maltreatment from the children starting at age 12, and we actually had a big conference, I guess, when the kids were 8 or so, bringing people in from all over the country to look at the legal and ethical and methodological issues involved in collecting data from children on their own maltreatment, because as you can imagine, there are a lot of issues associated with that. But I think LongScan has developed a really good method for doing that, and you can actually read about that. There was a special issue in Child Abuse and Neglect in 2005 that just looks at all the issues related to measuring maltreatment, because one of the hardest things in any study of maltreatment is how you measure it, how you really get good data on it. And so LongScan has written a lot about its experiences with that. The neglect measure was used at 12 years old and 14 years old, and that came from Strauss, and then LongScan developed its own measure that they used after that at 16 and 18. These self-report measures were administered using a audio computer-assisted self-interviewing technique so that the children would be filling out their own data, seeing one question at a time on a computer that they would answer, and then depending on their answer to that question, they would have other follow-up questions. As I said, we also gather data on witness violence collected through self-report, and starting at age 6, we used a measure that was developed by Richter and Martinez at NIMH called Things I've Seen and Heard. For later data points, we adapted, again, from Richter and Martinez. They have some measures for older children looking at things that kids have witnessed and violence witnessed in the home and in the community. We selected items from the exposure to witnessed violence measure a priori to examine here. We left out, and the reason I say we selected it, went back and looked at some items, and they were so frequent. I mean, things like hearing gunshots or seeing someone arrested, there was just no variability in the data on that. And we also thought that we weren't really sure. I think there was another one like seeing someone beat up, very, very, very high endorsements. And we thought we're not really sure what the kids mean by that. They might be talking about their brother and sister. There are a lot of rural areas in North Carolina, and gunshots could be hunting. So we dropped all of those and kept the items that we thought were definitely indicators of witness violence. So the examples are, have you ever seen someone get stabbed? Have you ever seen someone get shot? Even when the kids were 6 years old and we looked at these data for the first time, the percentages were pretty shocking, like 15% or so had seen someone shot or stabbed. But this is a high-risk sample. So again, if the kids endorsed any of these severe witnessing items, then they were coded as having witnessed violence. So the outcome measure that we call deviant behavior was just defined as any self-report at age 18 of substance abuse or delinquent behavior in the last year, so the year before they gave the data at age 18. So that was coded dichotomously. It went the wrong way. No, I didn't. Yeah, so the delinquent and violent behavior scale, we used a scale that had 29 items that was adapted from Huizinga. Again, we took a look at the items before we scored it to see which ones seemed like we wanted to be really conservative in this, and so there were some items that seemed fairly minor, like have you ever stolen money or things worse worth $5 or less. So we dropped some of the minor items and kept 23 items. And when we ran a Cronvox Alpha on that, the internal consistency was really very good at 91. To look at substance abuse and delinquency, we used two measures, and again, we were trying to sort of take a conservative look at this. So one was the Young Adult Diagnostic Interview Schedule for Children. It's a fairly new measure of the DISC that allows you to do DSM-4 diagnoses. And so if the kid received a diagnosis of dependence or abuse in the last year, then they were coded as having substance abusing. We also used another scale that we had used for many years during adolescence, the tobacco and alcohol and drug use scale, and that one looks at substantial use of any of the drugs in the last 30 days. So our results. This is what the demographics of the sample looked like at age 18. So you'll see that we're able to retain 162 of the original 241 kids in the sample. So that's about two-thirds, 66%, which we actually consider to be a pretty good follow-up rate for kids who are at such high risk and have so many problems that we had seen over the years. They really worked very hard in trying to keep the families in the study. When I looked at these demographics, I thought for kids who are 18, the years of completed education here are really not very illuminating. And so I just wanted to let you know that at age 18, 83% of the kids had finished high school or were still in high school, which it's not really clear from looking at those data. 17% had dropped out without finishing. So these slides display the lifetime exposure to maltreatment and witness violence of the sample. And you'll see that according to the social service records and the children's own self-report, that the exposure rate is quite high. 86% of the children at 18 have experienced maltreatment or have witnessed violence. 52% physical abuse only, 28% for sexual abuse with some expected differences between males and females, neglect really high at almost 80%, and then polyvictimization, which was experiencing more than one kind of these three sorts of maltreatment, more than half of the kids. Witness violence also very high at 76%, and I think that when we overlap witnessed violence with maltreatment, we come up with something like 94% of the children have experienced maltreatment or have witnessed violence. And interestingly, even though there look like there's some differences there because the sample size is small, there are not any significant differences by gender on any of those types of abuse. So this table displays the percentage of kids who report engaging in deviant behavior in the last year. 55% of the boys and 43% of the girls. And again, this difference is not statistically significant. Substance abuse alone is fairly low, but delinquency and violence, I think, is certainly higher than you would see in a normal population. And as you can see, you know, it gets even higher when you start to look at the combination of substance abuse and delinquency and violence. So overall, calling deviant behavior engaging in violence, delinquency, or substance abuse, we have 47% of the kids are at age 18. We did some univariate analyses to look at the relationship between types of abuse and deviant behavior, and we found that all the types of abuse were associated with deviant behavior, except for witness violence. It wasn't, so that's why you're not going to see it in this model here. We also looked at interactions with gender and found only one significant interaction, and that was gender with physical abuse. So we put together a logistic regression model to look at the impact of these different types of maltreatment when controlling for the other. And what we see in this is that neglect, when controlling for everything else, neglect is the biggest predictor of deviant behavior. And then there is also a significant association between physical abuse by gender. And when we looked at the direction that was going in, we could see that it was boys who were physically abused were more likely to be displaying deviant behavior at age 18. When examining separate models for boys and girls, we just took another look at it in another way, and we still see that for boys, if you look at the chi-square there, that for boys, being physically abused is associated with deviant behavior. What surprised us was in this model for females that neglect is highly associated with deviant behavior for females. It surprised us because we hadn't seen it in the previous analysis, but the thing to keep in mind with this is that the n's are quite small, and in some ways it may be hiding effects because you'd need a much larger sample to be able to see small effects with this kind of thing. So we still have, you know, much more work to do with these data in order to try to understand them. So thinking back to the primary aims of the study, the conclusions are that these subjects who were selected to be at risk at birth show extraordinarily high rates of exposure, which shows you that these risk factors that North Carolina was tracking are very good risk factors. These children, in fact, were at very high risk, and we can see by age 18 that they've had a lot of exposure and a lot of problems. There was a high rate of deviant behavior at age 18 with no difference between males and females, and exposure to neglect, and boys who experienced physical abuse were at much higher risk for deviant behavior at age 18. So, just a few things worth noting. This is really a preliminary analysis. It's just a first look at the relationship between lifetime exposure and a prospective longitudinal sample and its relationship to outcomes in young adults. And even with these crude measures, and they are crude measures because they're just dichotomous. I mean, we're just looking at yes, no. Yes, no, have they experienced maltreatment? Yes, no, are they engaging in these behaviors? With these really crude measures, we're still seeing a relationship, and I think that that's pretty remarkable. And we're seeing gender effects that deserve further attention. The LongScan Consortium continues, and there'll be many, many more analyses of this treasure trove of data. And so as the sample size grows and they bring in the data from the other sites, and there'll be 1,400 kids by the time this is all over with, LongScan will be able to do some things that were harder to do in this analysis because of the small sample size, which will be able to look at levels of exposure so we can look much more detail at the data, look at the severity of the abuse because we know about that. We know who the perpetrators are. We know the frequency. We know the chronicity. We'll be able to look at those things. We also know that exposure to violence is not the only risk factor that children experience when they grow up, and so some next steps will be to look at this along with other kinds of exposures, like the things we were talking about a minute ago, to parental substance abuse, parental mental health problems, that sort of thing, and to look at protective factors as well, like what kind of support have they received during their life from a caring adult, or their intelligence, or their school success, because we know that there are factors like this that present, that predict resilience, and that might mitigate the likelihood of poor outcomes. And finally, because all of these data have been collected over many, many data points, LongScan will be able to examine cumulative and composite measures, and this is going to be a real challenge for us with data analysis, is to figure out how to take all this data collected over all these data points and put them together and come up with meaningful measures that help us understand what a lifetime of experience looks like. But those are the next steps for LongScan. And you know, we'll also be able to look at, is it important if things happen during certain developmental periods? So LongScan is going to continue, and I'm going to show you the website right there if you're interested in knowing more about the study and reading other papers, especially about the measurement of maltreatment. I invite you to go to the website and to stay tuned for future announcements. Here, acknowledgments of our support from the Administration of Children and Families and also the National Institute of Child Health and Development. And I thank you for your attention.